Stay tuned for Mystery Theater. I'm E.G. Marshall, bringing you, hopefully, an enjoyable shudder. Certainly, fans of the occult like the dark and dangerous tales we spin because of the vicarious enjoyment that comes from the delicious shivers of the supernatural. But let me issue a warning to all you ghost lovers. Do not, I repeat, do not ever make the mistake of thinking that ghosts are fun. Mrs. Mary Boyne and her husband did, and this tale tells what happened to them. Our mystery drama, Afterward, was adapted from the Edith Wharton classic, especially for the Mystery Theater, by Murray Burnett, and stars Celeste Holm. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and Allstate Insurance Companies. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Isn't it nice to know you're free? To see the things you want to see. The touch to height you dare to reach. To know you're all that you can be.
Yes, I am.
You are in a hurry.
Oh, yes.
Well, no doubt you're rushing down to buy a Buick Electra because you know that Electra has the kind of ride and comfort Buick's famous for.
That's right.
And because you know it's America's second largest selling full-size luxury car.
You got it.
So you're hurrying because you want to get there before the Electras are all gone.
That's very good. How did you know I was going to buy a Buick Electra?
Well, it was on the shopping list you dropped back there, you see. Dozen eggs, quart of milk, Buick Electra.
Son of a gun, I forgot the pistachio nuts.
That's not on the list.
Well, I forgot them anyhow.
Remember the phrase, Kilroy was here, so popular back in the days of World War II? I feel certain most of you remember, but if we go back a few years farther, how many of you recall the phrase, the little man who wasn't there? What do all these phrases have to do with our tale? Well, stretching a point, we might say that our story concerns the ghost that wasn't there, or at least not when you expected him. If this sounds confusing, let's listen to the lady whose story it is.
My name is Mary Boyne. My address is Suite 357 in a wood, Dorsetshire, England. Of course, I'm American and alone and sane. The reason I mention sanity is because they call this place a rest home, but actually it's a place for people who have money and who are supposed to be not quite right in the head. I told you I'm sane, but I must confess it's difficult to understand how I managed to retain my sanity after what happened. But you be the judge and jury. I'll start at the beginning, back in America, in the little town of Waukesha, and the little house where I lived happily with Ned. Ned, you're home early.
You bet. I'm not only home early, darling, but I'm home for good. I've sold the Blue Star Mine for $5 million.
Oh!
Mary, Mary, my love, are you all right?
Oh, yes, fine, darling, but you're joking.
Never, never more serious. We're finished with drudgery, darling. Finished living in this house, in this town, and don't even bother to pack. Let's just make our dream come true today.
I know that Americans are often impulsive, generous, and even, forgive me, sometimes a trifle foolish, but I must say, Mr. and Mrs. Boyne, you are something new in my experience as a realtor.
Well, is that a nice English way of saying you don't have a suitable house for us?
Not at all, Mr. Boyne.
No. Please forgive my husband, Mrs. Stair, but our search for a house in England is the answer to what both he and I have always considered an impossible dream. You see, I was born in England, and I went to America as a child, and I've always wanted to return, and now we can.
Is it so strange that we want a house we ourselves can remodel and modernize?
No, that's understandable. But to be so far from any means of transportation.
Perhaps I should say that Ned and I are really looking for two things. To get away from our old lifestyle in America and to find our roots.
Yes, I have a house that seems to be made to order for your specifications. It's been on the market for years because it needs so much remodeling, and it's 14 miles from the nearest rail station.
Great, great.
Let me finish. It was built in the time of the Tudors.
Oh.
Needs a tremendous amount of modernization, particularly in the matter of heating and hot water.
Sounds super to me. But how about a ghost, Mrs. Stair?
Oh, Dorsetshire's full of ghosts.
That's nice. But I did so want one of my own, right on the premises.
Mrs. Boyne, you shouldn't ask for anything like that. There is a traditional ghost that goes along with the house. Particularly nasty ghost. Those are a rather strange one.
Strange? How so?
Because the history of the ghost of your house at Ling is that no one knows that they've seen a ghost until long afterward.
Well, that's crazy.
What in the world makes a ghost, except for the fact that you know when you see it? It either moans or wears white shrouds or touches you with icy fingers.
The only thing I can tell you is that there are stories about the ghost of Ling, and every single one of them is identical. The person who sees the ghost doesn't know it's a ghost until afterward.
Oh, forget it, Mary. No, no, life is too short to enjoy a ghost. You've got to wait to find out if it's a real ghost or not. No, but this house at Ling seems to have so much else going for it. Darling, I think we really should take a look at it.
We went, we looked, and we were conquered. Both Ned and I fell instantly in love with Ling. It was a lovely old Tudor house, just as the agent had described it, exactly what we'd both dreamed of, and it was definitely secluded. We bought it and moved in. But although I was in seventh heaven and up to my ears in planning for remodeling the old house, there was something definitely wrong with Ned.
Oh, these powders don't do a thing for my headaches.
But the doctor said...
I know what the doctor said, darling, and I followed his prescription, but I still have the headaches.
Darling,
mm-hmm.
Do you think perhaps we've made a mistake about this house?
No, Ling is perfect. Perfect. We both knew it the moment we saw it. The gardens are a delight, and under your tender, loving care, grow more beautiful every day.
Oh, with Hilton's great help.
Nonsense. No, Hilton is a good gardener, darling, but he hasn't your green thumb. No, my love. The house is perfect, and there's absolutely nothing wrong. These headaches will go away in time.
So you're not going to tell me?
Dear heart, there is nothing to tell.
But I knew better. Something was very wrong, and I intended to find out what it was. Lydia Westlake was the village librarian, and had been ever since the oldest inhabitant could remember.
Well, Mrs. Boyne, what a pleasure. Is there anything I can do for you?
Miss Westlake, I really must apologize for not coming to see you and this lovely old library before.
Oh, my dear, no apologies necessary. Everyone in town knows how busy you've been patching up Ling.
Well, that's one reason I'm here. To ask if you have any books about the history of Ling.
Ah, you mean about the architecture?
Not exactly. The whole, well, everything. Maybe even something about the ghost.
Well, I really shouldn't say this, but it's best for everyone to try to forget about the Ling ghost. Oh, believe me.
Oh, I believe you, Miss Westlake, but I'm still interested in everything about Ling.
Well, very well. You'll find some books on the history of Ling under G226.
There were three books. I took them all and went back to Ling and started to read. Two incidents mentioned the Ling ghost, and they were absolutely horrifying. What I hadn't told the librarian was that I wanted to find out more about the ghost because of the way Ned was acting.
Who the devil is it?
Well, it's me, darling.
I'm sorry, Mary. It's just that I'm, well, I'm sorry.
Have the servants been interrupting you?
No. Oh, gosh, we've never kept secrets from each other. It's my consultation work with the Blue Star Mine back in the States.
But why in the world should that be so disturbing?
Well, there were some problems I hadn't expected.
But I've never seen you like this. Is there any chance we'll have to go back to America?
No. It's nothing like that. It's just that there's there's a troublemaker who's after me. Darling, tell me how you're coming with the house and your research on the ghost.
I don't want to hear anything more about that ghost.
Well, why this sudden about face?
I just don't, that's all. Let's make a pact. You stop worrying, and I'll stop talking about the ghost. The pact didn't work. Oh, how I wish it had. Perhaps things would not have turned out the way they did. If we had left Ling, and I had listened to my presentiment about the Ling ghost... Ned grew more irritable, and I ever more frightened.
What's the matter with those fools back in Waukesha? They can't handle the simplest matters without asking me a million questions.
Ned, why don't you give up the consulting job? Oh. We don't really need it. I mean, do we?
No, not the money, but in a way... Well, in a way, we do need it.
I don't understand.
Well, it's a complicated business, Mary, involving lawyers and a lot of legal matters that would only bore you.
Bore me? I'd rather be bored or sad or anything. If only I could see you more relaxed.
Well, you will. You will, darling. It'll just take a little time.
Time for what?
Well, I have problems with the Blue Star. So, look, why don't you bring me up to date on your ghost, huh?
Oh, Ned, because I'm frightened. I read a story in one of those books I took from the library about the young wife of the son of the man who built Ling.
Uh-huh. And what about it?
Well, it seems she had fallen madly in love with one of the men here before she met the Ling son. And, oh, Ned, must I?
Well, please, darling, it can't be all that shocking now in this day and age.
Well, she disposed of an unwanted child and kept it a secret.
Oh?
Some years later, after she was happily married and had a little girl of her own, she was out strolling through these gardens one day when she met an absolutely enchanting young girl, just about her daughter's age. They all hit it off very well, and soon the three became friends. The only thing was that they couldn't ever figure out where this enchanting child lived or who were her parents. And this began to worry the young mistress of Ling, until one day her daughter... disappeared and was never found or seen again.
Well, I don't understand.
Don't you? The mother did. She had seen the ghost of Ling, her daughter's little friend. The ghost was the illegitimate child she'd killed. Only she didn't know till afterward.
I'm sorry, Mary, for making you tell me that story.
It's all right. There's more in those old books. There's something about a secret staircase.
Oh?
I should be able to locate it. You get a marvelous bird's eye view of the entire country.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Why don't you help me search for it?
Can't. I have to work on my correspondence, but if and when you find it, give me a shout. I'll be in the library.
I set off on another exploration of Ling, but this time with a purpose. And finally... just like a heroine in some gothic novel, I pressed a panel of the old wainscoting in one of the rooms, and it slid back, revealing a small circular flight of stairs leading upward. I climbed the tiny corkscrew staircase to the roof of Ling. Oh, the book hadn't exaggerated the beauty of the view. I called excitedly down the stairs, Ned! Ned! I found it, and it's beautiful! Come up here and see!
Wow. Oh, darling, this is really something. Why, you can see for miles. How did you find it?
Just followed the directions in the book. Went around pressing the paneling, and suddenly there it was, the staircase. Just look. Of course, I know you can see farther than I can.
Oh, but darling, your eyes are more beautiful. Well, hello. Well, who's that?
Who? Where?
Well, can't you see that man coming towards the house? I've got to go down and see who it is.
Ned! Ned! Wait for me! There you are, darling. I've been looking all over for you.
Well, I've been right here in the library.
Well, you dashed off that roof and went running out the front door. Who was it?
Who was what?
The man you saw coming toward you in the garden.
Oh, that man. Well, you see, dear, I thought I saw the gardener, and I ran after him to tell him about some of the drains which need tending. But, you see, he disappeared before I reached him.
Disappeared?
Mm-hmm.
But he seemed to be walking so slowly and toward the house, not away from it.
Well, that's the way it seemed to me, too. But, I guess, we must have been wrong. Unless it could have been the ghost.
Now, we all know there are no such things as ghosts, or at least some of us know. But one thing we would all agree upon is that if there really are ghosts, they won't go away even if you don't mention them. I'll be back shortly with more mention and more answers to the mysterious ghost of Ling. Cold medicines. Choose. The green liquid you take every 4 hours when confined to home or at bedtime. That's 4 hours relief per dose. Or give your cold a contact. Contact's different. Just one capsule works up to 12 hours, all through the day and all through the night. Contact doesn't have ingredients for pain and cough like the liquid. And just one contact gives you as long relief from sneezing, drips, and congestion as 3 doses of the liquid. The tiny time pills do it. Now, for all day and all night relief, what'll you choose? Stay home with your cold or take contact?
Give your cold to contact.
Use only as directed.
To contact your cold.
Do you know about the new ways to relieve tension, sinus problems, aging symptoms? Do you know about the surgeon who uses vitamin E to help people with circulation problems? If you don't know, you probably don't know Prevention, America's largest health magazine. All this vital information has appeared recently in Prevention, and each month, over 1.5 million subscribers depend on Prevention for the same kind of helpful information about living healthier, happier, longer lives. Try Prevention for yourself. 12 issues, only $5.85, and the editors will also send you the Good Health Cooking Guide free. To order Prevention, send no money now. Just phone 757-5650. In New York, that's 212-757-5650. Out of town, call Collect. Or write Prevention, WOR, New York, 10018. If you don't like the first issue, cancel and keep the issue and the free cooking guide. You'll owe nothing, but do phone today, 757-5650 for Prevention. If yours has been a generous measure of gracious living, your senior years should be lived in a grand manner, too. And they are at the Cupola, the ultimate in senior citizens facilities, conveniently located in Paramus, New Jersey. At the Cupola, living quarters are private, of course, each is kitchenette equipped and available unfurnished or furnished. Yes, the grand manner of living is alive at the Cupola with gift, barber, beauty shops, card and game rooms, libraries, a theater, maid service 7 days a week, planned activities, 3 superb meals a day from a diversified menu, a fully staffed infirmary right on the premises, and every convenience, including the famous Paramus Ridgewood shopping hubs. The Maloney family, owners and managers, invite you to discover this truly distinctive senior citizens facility for yourself. Visit the Cupola at West 100 Ridgewood Avenue in Paramus, or call 201-444-8200, or if you prefer, write WOR for their free full-color brochure. The Cupola. Make the next years the very best years of your life.
Institutions for the mentally ill have come a long way. They are quite beautiful and often look like an ideal retirement home. even on the inside where everyone wears a smile. It takes an expert to be able to see some of the anguish that lies behind the smile, like the pain that continually racks Mary Boyne.
None of the staff nor the guests at Innerwood Rest Home can understand why I hate to hear the sound of the postman's whistle when he comes with the mail. They think it's because I have no one who cares enough to write to me. Well, it's true that I have no one, but the reason I dread the postman's whistle is because if it weren't for the postman and the mail and... There I am, confusing you again. But it all relates to one arrival of the mail at Lane.
Oh, this is from old Joe Sitwell asking how we are, and this one's for you.
I'm so glad there are no letters to disturb you. What's this?
Let me see.
It's a newspaper clipping. Front page article from the Waukesha Sentinel.
Oh?
It says that a man named Elwell has brought a lawsuit against you. That there was something wrong about the Blue Star Mine. I haven't read it all, but...
Darling, you wouldn't understand more than half of it, even if you finished.
Well, maybe not. But now I understand what it is that's been bothering you.
No, it's really nothing, darling.
Nothing? On the front page of the Sentinel? Ned, what's this all about?
Oh, now, why don't we have some tea first?
This lawsuit isn't new to you.
No. No, of course not. I've known about it for some time.
Of course you have, and you've been having sleepless nights and headaches for some time. What does this man accuse you of?
Oh, pretty nearly everything he could dream up.
Why? Why would a man do that?
Oh, because he figures he can make some money.
But surely he must have some reason. There must be something he thinks you've done.
All right. All right, darling, I'll tell you the whole story. Mary, dear, you must know that whenever a fortune is made overnight, there are always some envious people who believe they deserve a share of the windfall, and that's exactly what Elwell thinks.
Who is Elwell? I don't know that name.
Well, he's a man I put in to the Blue Star. He made some money, and now he wants more.
How did you put him into it?
Well, he brought me the samples to be assayed, and, well, I told you about it at the time, but I didn't make a big deal out of it in case they proved to be worthless.
I think I'm be... But if everything is the way you say, and you paid him...
Well, of course I paid him.
Well, then why does he sue you now?
Oh, well, probably because some lawyer got hold of him and talked him into it, hoping for a fat fee. Or maybe he thought I'd get scared. You know, Bob Elwell ought to have known me better than that.
I certainly agreed with that. Anyone did business with Ned would know he wasn't the sort to be frightened of anything. But there was no question that he was worried. And I was hardly surprised when he turned to me one night and said...
Darling, have you any idea how long it's supposed to be before you know whether or not you've seen the Ling ghost?
Why, no. None. Have you?
No. No, of course not.
It's rather an odd question to ask me, darling, unless you think you have seen the ghost.
Well, I really don't know why I asked the question. It just popped into my head, and so I asked it.
I know your engineer's mind, Ned. And I know how it worries and worries about a problem until you solve it. Now, I want you to tell me something on your solemn word of honor. Promise.
Okay, my word of honor.
That you believe you have seen the Ling ghost, and that you're trying to keep it from me, and that's what's worrying you?
Cross my heart, darling. I don't think I've seen the Ling ghost, at least not to my knowledge, because according to the ancient tradition, one really doesn't know when he's seen the ghost.
And with that, I had to be satisfied. I knew my husband. There was no more to be gained from questioning him. But I thought to myself, maybe there was something to be gained from questioning the ghost. That is, if I could manage to locate the elusive spirit. Of course, I knew that you weren't supposed to be able to know you'd seen the ghost, but I was haunted by the idea of the disappearing figure we'd seen from the rooftop. So once again, I climbed the small secret stairway and stood on the roof ledge. I cupped my hands and shouted to the sky, "Oh, spirit, specter, shadow, whatever you choose to call yourself, we've done you no harm. We want to live here in peace. Oh, ghost of Ling, break with the past. Break with tradition and show yourself to me.
Mary, Mary, what on earth do you think you're doing?
That's obvious, isn't it, darling?
Well, if you mean you're making a darn fool of yourself and, incidentally, of me, yes.
Well, I'm sorry if I was stupid.
It isn't stupidity, Mary. It's just this obsession of yours with a ghost. You're only adding to my worries.
I don't want that. You know I don't want that.
Well, then maybe we should leave, Ling.
Oh, but I love this house, and so do you.
Well, but I think there's something else we have to do, and let's get right on with it.
Ned was just trying to help me, like the staff here at Innerwood. And he thought maybe by arranging a seance with a reputable and respected medium might put my mind at rest. Ned thought that perhaps the medium might be able to get through and reach the ghost.
Now, you both understand that as a man of integrity, I can promise you nothing.
Yes, Mr. Woods, you've already made that very clear.
It is difficult to overemphasize the possibility of failure.
Can we start, please?
Please be patient, Mrs. Boyne. All the research I have done on the ghost of Ning seems to bear out the tradition. He or she appears, and only afterwards do the people realize they have made contact with a ghost.
Yes, we know all that, but isn't it also true that there's never been an attempt to reach this ghost through a reputable medium?
That is so.
Well, that's why we came to you. I want to find out if there is a ghost of Ling, and if there is, you should be able to reach him.
I should, but as I said...
Please, let's not go through all that again. Let's hope you will succeed.
Right. Now, this is our first seance.
Ah, well, I'm afraid it is very much like what you have read in books and heard about. We will keep this room dimly candlelit, just as it is now, and so... I ask you to join hands with me. Huh? That is it. Now, close your eyes and concentrate.
On what?
On the ghost.
But I want...
Just think of the ghost, Mrs. Boyne. If there is any communication, it must come through me.
Is that all? Is it over now?
It is over, yes.
Well, you said you might fail.
I did not fail.
But we didn't see or hear a thing. Did you, Ned?
Oh, nothing.
I pierced the veil. I reached my control.
Well, then what...
You said you thought I was an expert. And I believe I convinced you that I am not a fake.
Well, okay, but if you reach...
Let me assure you... that there is no spirit, no ghost, happy or unhappy, inhabiting these premises at Ling.
Ned, tell me, did you believe Mr. Woods?
Well, darling, he's supposed to be the best, and he said there definitely wasn't any ghost at Ling.
Hey, something's happened to you.
What?
It's happened since the seance.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're different.
Oh, come on, Mary.
Maybe something did happen at that seance.
What?
I mean, those drawn lines in your face have disappeared. Smiles come back into your eyes. You slept better last night. Come on, admit it.
All right, I admit that, but it has nothing to do with the seance.
Well, then what caused the change?
Well... Perhaps it was a cable I received yesterday saying that I could probably expect some very good news about that Elwell suit very shortly.
And it was the lawsuit that bothered you after all.
Yeah, well, yes, perhaps more than I knew. Well, at any rate, we'll find out with tomorrow's mail.
Has the mail come yet?
No, not yet, darling. Anyway, I thought you were going to be all taken up with that engineer from Dorsetshire who's going to show us how to install a hot water system.
Well, I'm looking forward to his visit, but I remember what you said about the mail.
Oh, there's the postman now, dear. Here, let me beat you to it, Mary.
We'll go together.
All right. Ah, here we are. Oh, airmail special from Waukesha.
What does it say? Open it, open it.
All right. Ah. Good news, darling.
You mean you've won? You've won the lawsuit?
Oh, the suit's been withdrawn, so there's nothing to worry about.
Then everything's all right.
Oh, couldn't be righter. Now, how about giving me a kiss, and you go wait for that engineer.
One of the strangest things I remember was my total sense of security as Ned held me in his arms. I left Ned and walked out into the gardens. Oh, the day was beautiful. It seemed even brighter than it actually was because of the change in Ned. As I walked along the flagstones, I heard footsteps behind me. I stopped and turned.
I came to see Mr. Boyne.
I'm Mrs. Boyne. Do you have an appointment with my husband?
I think he expects me.
Well, he's working on a book, so he never sees anyone in the morning.
Oh.
Wait. You seem tired. Have you come a long way?
Yes, I have come a long way.
Well, then I suppose if you'll go to the house, my husband will see you. You'll find him in the library. It's that way. I watched the stranger enter the house, and then I went to find the gardener, and soon the engineer arrived. And the morning just sped by. We'd finished with the plans for the hot water system, and it was time for lunch. I went to the dining room, but Ned wasn't at the table. Nor was he in the library. I remember calling and calling and then asking the servants whether they'd seen him. But Ned was nowhere to be found. Not at the luncheon, not in the garden, not in the house. And he didn't come back that afternoon, nor was he there for dinner. By that time, I was frantic and called the police. The local police shook their heads and called in Scotland Yard.
Well, now, Mrs. Bourne, I can only try to reassure you by telling you that we haven't found your husband's body.
Well, that's very reassuring, Inspector. You're telling me my husband has just disappeared into thin air, vanished without a trace?
Oh, no, ma'am. What I'm trying to say is that if there was any foul play, and in these cases sometimes there is, we usually find the body of the dead man within 48 hours. So perhaps I was clumsy, but I was trying to tell you that there is hope that Mr. Boyne is alive.
Well, then where is he?
Oh, of course, I can't answer that question for you at this time. But I promise you, Mrs. Boyne, all the resources of Scotland Yard will be employed to find him for you. Oh.
I must admit the inspector kept his word. And also kept my hopes alive. The yard kept me up to date on every development. But alas, they were so pitifully few, they did nothing to nourish my hope that my darling Ned would soon come back to me.
All the resources of Scotland Yard, will they prove to be as ineffective as all the king's men and all the king's horses in putting Humpty Dumpty together again? Or will they come up with some strange and sinister solution to the disappearance of Ned Boyne? I'll be back with the answers shortly. Allstate asks, do you own a small business? Go over these questions with your present group health and life insurance agent. If your agent doesn't say yes to every one, then
talk to the good hands people.
First question, does your present group plan cover all x-rays and lab tests other than in routine physical exams? If not,
talk to the good hands people.
Does your present group plan provide disability income protection to help replace your employees' paychecks and yours? If not,
talk to the good hands people. You're in good hands with Allstate.
See your Allstate agent to find out what an Allstate plan costs, what is and isn't covered, including benefit reductions and terms under which insurance continues in force. Allstate Insurance Companies, available in most states to businesses that qualify.
If you or someone you love is over age 50, get paper and pencil ready to respond to this announcement. Now, even though you're over 50, you can buy life insurance with no physical examination and no medical questions. If you're a male between 50 and 72 or a female between 50 and 75, you cannot be turned down for this plan. Premiums are just $6.95 a month, and your policy accumulates cash and loan values. This is Prime Life 50 Plus, underwritten by Intra-America Life Insurance Company, a member of the Colonial Penn Group.
Through its modified death benefit, Prime Life 50 Plus leads to the benefits of permanent life insurance, regardless of your health. This plan is limited to residents of New York State, so if you're a New York State resident, age 50 or over, call now for free information in the mail. The call is free, 800-243-5533. That's 800-243-5533. Did you know that the estrogen pills used by 4 million women may cause cancer? Do you know why it's taking 15 years to take Red Dye 2 off the market? Do you know that the civil war in Lebanon could become the fifth Arab-Israeli war? Do you know how all of these events and facts could affect you personally? Your answer should be yes, because you should be reading the National Observer. The National Observer is written for people who want more from a newspaper, and now you can get the next 26 weekly issues of the Observer for only $6. That's less than 23 cents a week. And the National Observer will send you free a 248-page book that will give you advice on coping with college costs, how to escape a fire in your home, how you can actually make money from your trash. It will show you how to stretch your dollars on all subjects from staying healthy to taking better and less expensive care of your car. It's free if you subscribe to the National Observer now. Call toll-free 800-228-1776. That's 800-228-1776.
The disappearance of husbands is usually regarded by most police as a mystery with fairly obvious solutions. Most commonly, the police look for the runaway mate who's been unable to cope with a nagging wife, or secondarily, a woman who has decided to strike out looking for a new mate by disposing of the old one. Of course, neither of these theories was even entertained for a moment by Scotland Yard in the case of the disappearance of Ned Boyne.
Now, Mrs. Boyne, we all know what a good marriage you and Mr. Boyne had. But we're momentarily at a loss.
A man just doesn't vanish off the face of the earth.
Not without leaving clues. Something that will help us find him. Now, if you don't mind, we'll just go back once more over the way you found out he was gone.
I spent most of the morning with a Mr. Loomis, an engineer from Dorsetshire, going over some plans he had for installing a hot water system.
If you don't mind, I'd like to get to the stranger who asked for your husband.
Well, I've told you everything I know about him.
And told it well, ma'am. A good description. Much better than we got from Nellie, the housemaid.
She saw him too?
Oh, yes, indeed. We even found out that he wrote his name on a card he gave her.
Well, then you should know.
If I may, ma'am, let me just condense the maid's testimony from my notes here. Now, she said that the gentleman was a stranger and perhaps a foreigner. He asked for Mr. Boyne, and she asked who was calling, and then he wrote his name on a piece of paper and asked her to carry it into your husband.
Well, didn't you ask her what Ned, my husband, said when she brought him the paper?
Well, Nellie told us your husband didn't have time to say anything, because just as she handed the paper to Mr. Boyne, she realized that the stranger had followed her into the library. She left them together.
If Nellie says that she left this stranger alone in the library with my husband, how can we be so sure that Ned left the house?
It isn't the maid's evidence we're going by, ma'am. Hilton, the gardener, swears he saw your husband leave the house by the front door accompanied by a gentleman. And he gives a description which pretty much tallies with yours and Nellie's.
But why? Why would Ned just go off like that without a word to me or to anyone?
You've already said your husband has been worried. So if you could give us some clue as to what it was that was bothering him...
Well, I told you about that lawsuit back in America.
But you didn't tell us about the seance and your attempts to locate the Ling ghost.
Now, surely, Inspector, you're not going to tell me that Scotland Yard is taking ghost stories seriously.
Oh, no, ma'am. But if Mr. Boyne did, it might be some explanation of his erratic behavior.
Are you telling me that you think my husband was mentally ill?
Well, now, ma'am, we need something to explain a happily married, wealthy man walking off in the middle of the morning accompanied by a stranger and so far leaving no trace.
But what about that unfinished letter you found in the library?
You obviously had to do with that business in America, which you, ma'am, assured us wasn't bothering your husband one bit.
But he did write the word safer, didn't he? Who was Parvis?
Now, we've checked, and Mr. Parvis is a perfectly respectable attorney back in Waukesha. And your husband's unfinished letter simply reads, "My dear Parvis, I have just received your letter announcing Elwell's death, and while I suppose there is now no farther risk of trouble, it might be safer..."
There. He says trouble, doesn't he?
Oh, he does indeed. And you believe that trouble could be so serious as to make him disappear without a word to you about it? Or the reason for leaving? Oh, no, we just can't believe that, Mrs. Boyne.
Then what do you believe? I mean, what has happened?
Mrs. Boyne, has your husband ever suffered from amnesia?
Never.
Does he have any medical history you could tell us about?
Ned was always healthy.
Well, England is a hard place to get lost in, Mum. It's almost impossible for two men to slip unnoticed through or out of the country.
How about just walking?
Mrs. Boyne, we have every official means of investigation working, and we've found nothing.
And so things remained at a stalemate for the next fortnight, despite the fact that my husband's name was headlined in every newspaper and his likeness looked down into my anguished eyes from the walls of every town and village. There was still not one single word of him, and no trace of his movements. And then one morning, Nellie brought a card to me in the library with the name Edward Parvis on it, and a new hope flooded my heart.
Mrs. Boyne?
Mr. Parvis, from Waukesha. You're the attorney my husband wrote to.
Yes, I found myself here in England, and I thought I should visit you.
Oh,
and...
I'm so glad you did. You've heard, of course, of my husband's disappearance, and I'm hoping that you've come to shed some light on it.
Well, I'm afraid you're in for a disappointment. My errand is of quite a different nature.
But his last unfinished letter was to you. I mean, surely...
Mrs. Boyne, is it possible you're unaware of what went on back at Waukesha?
Well, my husband and I were very close. We had no secrets from each other.
Well, I'm wondering what you mean to do about Bob Elwell's family.
Bob Elwell's family? I'm completely confused. I don't know them. Mr. Parvis, you must bear with me. I do need your help.
And I'm almost beginning to believe you. What? First of all, Bob Elwell is dead. His wife's a proud woman, and well, she fought on as long as she could. It's come out now how badly off the family is, and we're taking up a fund for her.
Elwell. Wait. That was the man Ned told me had helped him with the Blue Star.
That's what he told you, is it?
Well, it's true, isn't it?
Well, it's true, and yet it's... Well, all I can say is that it was business.
I don't understand at all.
Bob Elwell just wasn't smart enough, let's put it that way. It's the kind of thing that happens every day in business.
Mr. Parvis, I think you're trying to tell me nicely that my husband did something dishonorable.
I don't want you getting the wrong idea about Ned. He committed no crime.
What exactly did he do?
He went into business with Bob Elwell, and Bob should have been more careful about what he signed.
Why don't you come right out and say that Bob Elwell should never have trusted Ned?
Well, it was Elwell's claim that he came to Ned with the first samples from the Blue Star. You see, the Blue Star had been started and then abandoned. And Elwell believed there was a chance the previous owners had quit too soon.
But he came to my husband with this sample.
That's right. And your husband assayed. They both wanted to keep the whole thing quiet, because if there was any chance the Blue Star was still worth something, well, I don't have to tell you what that would have meant.
And Ned decided that the Blue Star was still a gold mine.
Right. Your husband and Elwell had to buy the Blue Star.
They bought it together?
They did. Elwell borrowed most of the money he put up to purchase the mine.
Well, so far that all seems pretty straightforward.
Uh-huh. Ned had the papers drawn up, and Elwell, well, he should have read them more carefully.
Why? What did the papers say?
That after Elwell had been paid back for the money he'd invested and received a profit of 5%, the entire ownership of the Blue Star reverted to Ned.
Oh, no.
Well, it was business, Mrs. Boyne. Elwell didn't have to sign it.
Well, evidently his lawyers felt that there was some merit to his claim when he sued Ned recently.
Well, they soon found out they didn't have a leg to stand on.
But if Elwell was so badly off, where did he find the money to hire lawyers?
A lot of people thought Elwell had been treated badly, and his lawyer was one of them.
You mean they took the case for nothing?
On a contingency basis. But when they saw they didn't have a case, they advised Elwell to withdraw the suit. Elwell became despondent and shot himself.
Shot himself? He killed himself because of that?
Well, he didn't kill himself exactly. He dragged on 2 months before he died.
And he tried to kill himself and failed? And then tried again?
No, he didn't have to try again. Well, the newspapers got hold of it, and it's all been raked up again, and this collection thing's been started. You know, most of us back in Waukesha liked Bob Elwell. Here's an account of the whole thing from the Sentinel. Maybe it would help you if you looked it over.
From the headline, it would seem the Sentinel knows who's to blame. Widow of Ned Boyne's victim forced to appeal for aid.
And I thought maybe you might care to...
This picture! This picture! It says this is Robert Elwell.
Yes, it is.
But this is the man who came for my husband. I mean, I'd know him anywhere.
Mrs. Boyne, I don't think you're very well. Shall I call somebody?
No, this is Robert Elwell. This is the man who spoke to me in the garden.
That can't be the man. It's Robert Elwell.
It was Robert Elwell who came for him.
Came for Ned? Elwell was dead. You know that now, don't you?
Robert Elwell came for him.
No, Mrs. Boyne, well, surely you remember your husband's unfinished letter to me. It was written after he'd heard of Elwell's death.
Robert Elwell was the man who spoke to me.
That's impossible.
You think I'm mad? I'm not. I'm quite sane. Will you answer me one question, please? When did Robert Elwell try to kill himself?
When?
Yes, the date. Please try to remember.
I don't think we should continue this conversation, Mrs. Boyne.
I have a reason for asking.
I'm sure you have, but... Well, I really can't remember. I'd guess about 2 months before he actually died.
I need the exact date.
We might find it in the paper here. Yes, here it is. Last October.
The 20th, wasn't it?
Yeah, the 20th. Then you did know about Elwell all the time.
I know now. Sunday, the 20th. That was the day he came here first.
Came here first?
Yes.
You saw him twice then?
Yes, twice. First on the 20th of October. I remember because that was the day I first discovered the secret staircase. And we saw him from the roof. He was dressed just as he is in the picture in the newspaper. My husband saw him first. He was frightened and ran down ahead of me. But there was no one there. He had vanished.
You say Elwell vanished?
Yes. I see now what happened. He tried to come then, but he wasn't really dead. He couldn't reach us. He had to wait 2 months to die. And then he came back again. And Ned went with him.
Oh, good Lord. I sent him to Ned. I told him where to go. I sent him to this room.
That's what they say about the Ling ghost. One never really knows that he's seen the ghost till afterward. Long, long afterward.
All the doctors at the rest home where they're treating Mrs. Mary Boyne are convinced that she's suffering from an almost historic sense of loss and bereavement because of the inexplicable disappearance of her husband. They're also all convinced that if only they could furnish her with a satisfactory explanation of that disappearance, she would be cured. But of course, we know better. At least, we who believe know that it's the explanation rather than the disappearance that's the root of her trouble. I'll be back in a moment.
When you say that, you've said a lot of things nobody else can say.
A lot of things, like Beechwood aging for 100% natural carbonation. That's how the Budweiser people age their beer. Nobody else does it that special way. But then, nobody else is brewing the king of beers. I could tell you a lot of other things about Budweiser and why it's the largest selling beer in the world. But it all comes back to the Budweiser taste, and that speaks for itself, loud and clear. Hear it talking?
There is no other one. There's only something left. Because the king of beer is leading all the rest. When you say Budweiser,
you've said it all.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
As the prices go up, up, up.
World-famous Harvey Seafood House on 3rd Avenue at 34th Street has reduced prices.
World-famous Harvey Seafood House on 3rd Avenue at 34th Street wants even more business, so...
We've reduced all entrees from 50 cents to a dollar. We added a choice of six complete dinners at $5.95 and $6.95. You save as much as $2.
That's savings. If we get enough extra business, we're smart. If not... Dumb, dumb, dumb.
World-famous Harvey Seafood House near 34th Street on 3rd Avenue has free two-hour dinner parking.
World-famous Harvey Seafood House serves only the finest quality seafood available. Cholesterol-free fish makes Harvey Seafood House a must for diet-conscious, heart-conscious people. You.
Do yourself a favor. Come on over to world-famous Harvey Seafood House on 3rd Avenue near 34th Street. You'll enjoy. American Express and Diners Club welcome.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Barry Lyndon, and Dog Day Afternoon. These are leading contenders for Oscars at the 48th Annual Academy Awards presentation, March 29th. And they're films I recommended here on WR's Rambling with Gambling program at the time they opened in New York last year. I'm Walter Spencer. Join me at 9:20 each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning when I review the new films, and again at the same time each Saturday when I sum up the pictures playing in the neighborhoods and suburbs. Get late word on the best and the worst of the new movies. That way you can keep up with Hollywood and ahead of Oscar.
And now, the shortest ghost story in the world. The long, dark, memory-filled corridors of one of the great art museums of the world just before closing time. A man hastens to the exit. He's joined by another art lover. The first man says, "Hey, it's pretty spooky around here at this hour." "Yes," says the second man. "Do you believe in ghosts?" "No," says the first man. "Do you?" "Yes," replies the second, and vanishes. Our cast included Celeste Holm, Larry Haynes, Joan Shea, Guy Sorrell, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule, and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
By CBS Radio. This is WOR New York, an RKO general station. At the WOR time signal, exactly 8 o'clock, here's John Scott with the news. Threatened strike of Metropolitan Nursing Home personnel avoided as the panel finds a solution. The polls are closed in Massachusetts and Vermont, and New York State's unemployment rate hits an all-time high. It's 35 degrees in drizzly mid-Manhattan. The man says cloudy, windy, and cool with periods of rain or drizzle and fog through tomorrow morning. This is John Scott with the 8 o'clock edition of the news. A special state task force headed by former Mayor Robert Wagner has headed off a strike by some 12,000 nursing home employees, which had been set for tomorrow morning. About 18,000 patients in 91 homes would have been affected by the walkout. The Metropolitan Nursing Home Association said a freeze on Medicare and Medicaid payments made it impossible to meet union demands of wage increases. The union was seeking a $10 a week increase for non-professionals who now make $183 a week, a $12 increase for practical nurses now making $232 a week, and a $13 a week hike for registered nurses making $292 a week. As I say, the special task force is headed off a strike. There will be no strike tomorrow. The polls are now closed in Massachusetts, where voters are electing delegates to the Democratic and Republican national conventions. Voter turnout was described as light in stormy weather. Eight major Democrats, dividing up 104 delegates, according to each candidate's share of the popular vote. On the GOP side, President Ford and Ronald Reagan, dividing 43 delegates. The Democratic race is a muddled one, and the winner is not expected to collect a majority of the vote. In addition to the eight major candidates, there are two minor ones, a no-preference line, and two Democrats who quit the national race too late to be taken off the ballot. Jimmy Carter established an early lead in the Vermont primary today. President Ford is unopposed on the state's GOP ballot. The primary amounts to a popularity contest, since delegates to each party's national convention have not yet been selected and are not bound by today's results. An aide to Frank Church says the Idaho senator will formally announce his candidacy for the Democratic presidential nomination on March 18th. The chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee already has set up a Washington campaign headquarters and is qualified for $100,000 in matching federal campaign funds. A deputy sheriff testified today that immediately after Patricia Hearst was arrested, she described herself as an urban gorilla. Deputy Sheriff Stephanie Marsh described Miss Hearst's face as having no real expression when she made the statement. Mrs. Marsh booked Miss Hearst into the San Mateo County Jail after her arrest last September. The defense in Miss Hearst's bank robbery trial then began cross-examining the deputy. The defense sought to show that Symbionese Liberation Army member Emily Harris was in the area when Miss Hearst gave her answers. The defense contends that Miss Hearst made her statement because she feared Mrs. Harris. The House Ethics Committee got preliminary approval today for broad subpoena power to investigate the leak of a secret intelligence report. However, Committee Chairman John Flint said the panel has not decided whether to call CBS reporter Daniel Shore, who has admitted leaking the report to a New York newspaper. Shore has acknowledged the arranged publication in the Village Voice of the House Intelligence Committee's secret report on intelligence agencies. The House Judiciary Committee sent a controversial gun control bill back to a subcommittee today. The move means that strict federal controls on firearms apparently will not be enacted this year. The bill would have prohibited the manufacture, the importation, and the sale of small handguns that are easily concealed. The measure also set higher license fees for gun dealers and would have imposed a 28-day waiting period before a handgun sale could be completed, and the bill set mandatory jail sentences for using a firearm to commit certain crimes. Winter storms hit many sections of the nation today, making traveling hazardous in the Rocky Mountains and the Great Plains. The storms also hit northern New England, the upper parts of the Midwest, and northern California. In many sections, the storm broke an unusual warm spell of winter weather. The WOR News Time, it's now 8:04. New York's unemployment rate in January rose to a record 11 1/10% of the workforce. The percentage figure translates to a total of 830,400 persons out of work. In December, the unemployment rate was 10 3/10%. The previous high unemployment rate was 10 7/10% in June and July of last year. In January of 1975, New York's unemployment rate was 9 4/10%. Most of the January increase in the jobless rate is attributed to seasonal layoffs. The state's worst area of unemployment is in the Buffalo region, where the jobless rate for January was 14 1/10%. Officials of Big Mac, the Municipal Assistance Corporation, say they're considering a second swap of their long-term bonds to the holders of $1.1 billion in short-term city notes, which were placed under a three-year moratorium last fall. A decision on the new offering would be made in 30 or 90 days. And a spokesman for Mayor Beam said no final decision had been made on revising the three-year budget balancing plan, as had been rumored, but conceded the alternatives are being explored. Meanwhile, Controller Harrison Golden this evening took exception to the suggestions that New York City can backload or delay imposing budget cuts required under the city's three-year fiscal recovery plan. The idea of postponing the reductions reportedly has been proposed by the advisors to Mayor Beam, a spokesman for whom says only that all options are open at this time. The rationale behind the suggestion is a delay would give a chance for the economy to recover or for an administration more friendly to New York to take over in Washington. But Controller Golden says that backloading is fiscally dangerous.
Well, I think that everybody recognizes that it might be desirable, if it were practical, to stretch out the period in which the city has to bring its budget into balance. But unfortunately, what that gets you down to is the question of who's going to pay for it. Last year, through a convulsive effort, All of the potential sources of cash were canvassed, and whatever we could put together, we did, in the $6 billion 3-year credit plan. And the city was obliged, as a result of that, to begin the process of exercising the discipline to live within the constraints and realities of the cash that was available. Now, if the city were to try to put that process off, to delay it, to prolong it, why, that would just mean more money from someplace, and I don't know where it could come from. And so it really isn't practical, I don't think, for the city to talk about delaying and backloading and stretching out, unless the city can answer the fundamental question, where is the cash going to come from to do it?
Special State Controller Sidney Schwartz, in a report of the city's plan to shave $200 million in the current fiscal year, would fall substantially short of its target. New York State Banking Superintendent John Hyman proposed today the legislature allow savings banks to issue checking accounts and to make personal loans. Traditionally, checking accounts and personal loans have been limited to commercial banks, but Hyman says his plan would help to stimulate competition in the banking business and give consumers more choices. Well, I'll have the weather in the top of the news after this.